Good morning. When people say to me, theatre is no longer central to our culture, it makes me smile. Of course it's not, any more than the bicycle is a central plank of our transport infrastructure. That's not to say that the bicycle doesn't have an important role to play, that it isn't a beautiful and useful thing, that it can't get you where you want to go, and in the process make you healthier and give you great pleasure. In a recent poll, the bicycle was voted the world's greatest invention. You never hear anyone saying that the bicycle is an irrelevance because it is no longer a major means of transportation. Curiously, you do frequently hear the same argument about theatre. It's an irrelevance, we're told, because as a means of getting the news, it's been superseded by TV and the net, as an entertainment by desperate housewives, and as of a means of bringing people together by the football match. Yet to say that theatre is therefore obsolete is as absurd as saying that the bicycle is obsolete. Theatre certainly wasn't an irrelevance to the 100,000 people I mingled with last week as part of the annual street arts festival, The Streets of Brighton. It wasn't an irrelevance to the people in the audience at The Lion King the Saturday before last when I took my daughter for a birthday treat. In fact, for a theatre critic, it was a rather salutary lesson to experience so much massed joy from an audience, particularly as it was a joy that so clearly transcended the £42 ticket price. Theatre wasn't an irrelevance last Wednesday at May Day Hospital in Croydon, where I spent the morning with a class of giggling, entranced nursery children watching the latest interactive show from Theatre Rights, a company who work almost exclusively with the under-fives, who are undoubtedly, indisputably, one of the greatest theatre companies that this country has produced in the last decade. Yet sometimes it seems to me that we in the theatre world collude with those who want to do theatre down. The hard truth is that in the last 20 years, the world has changed massively, socially, culturally, politically, technologically, even geographically. And yet mainstream theatre in Britain has changed very little. If theatre no longer seems central to our culture, perhaps it's because most of the theatre on our main stages and most of the theatre that is reviewed by critics and therefore given prominence and credibility within our culture comes from a particular tradition of theatre, one that has its antecedents in the theatrical revolutions of the late 19th and early 20th century. Please don't get me wrong, I'm not for a moment suggesting that we should jettison our rich heritage, that we should stop doing Shakespeare, that the text-driven play doesn't have a place in our culture. Clearly it does. You only have to look at the work of playwrights such as Martin Crimp, David Gregg, Philip Ridley, Carol Churchill, and Debbie Tucker Green to see that there are playwrights out there who are struggling not only to reflect the world in which we live, but also to find the necessary new forms. It's crucial that they do, because the assumptions that theatre could once make about its audiences, about a shared point of view, shared values, and shared narratives have broken down. We live in a much more fragmented, richer, and diverse world. Yet so often, that excitement, that sense of discovery, the feeling that everything is up for grabs, just doesn't seem reflected by what goes on our flagship stages and in the interactions that take place between performers and audiences. You could be forgiven for thinking that there is very little of a theatrical world outside of the West End and the big subsidised houses in London and the regions, that there's no rural touring, that there's no Garden of Delights or Streets of Brighton, that there's no clean break going and doing work in prisons, that there are not companies like Cardboard Citizens for all the coverage and for all the profile that those kind of companies are given. When people in theatre bemoan the lack of young audiences and of ethnically diverse audiences, my reaction is very simple. Get out more. Of course, when the price is right, we see young people at the theatre, at the £10 Travelex season at the National, or at Sheffield theatres, where if you're in full-time education, you can get a seat for £12.80. But there are an awful lot of young people out there at the theatre. The young people are so enthusiastic about the theatre. They're just not necessarily seeing theatre where you might expect to find them in the traditional spaces. They're seeing things like Philip Ridley's Mercury Fur that sold out as part of the Payne's Plough this other England season at the Menier Chocolate Factory. They're seeing the latest raw talent being nurtured at Theatre 503 in Battersea. They're at the Arcola at BAC, or they're at the Fierce Festival in Birmingham, or Not Dance, festivals that embrace new work and which isn't about sequential narratives, but about the search for new forms. Last year, I spent the afternoon in Birmingham, at Birmingham Rep, the only white middle-aged woman amidst a sea of black teenagers. I was watching a show called Slam Dunk, produced by Nitro Theatre Company, and it was an absolutely exhilarating experience, not just for what was going on stage, but for how the audience reacted to it. The audience engaged so completely with this tale about street basketball that they kept up a continuous running commentary about what was going on. They debated with each other as scenes took place. This was an audience that simply didn't know the rules of theatre, that you're supposed to sit passively in your seat and shut up. And because they didn't know the rules, and that the people who had produced the show knew that they wouldn't, there was room for them to interact with it and to take ownership for it. Theatre, I think, would be a lot better for a lot more rule-breaking. I see loads of evidence that there is a theatrical revolution sweeping this country, that there are whole generations out there trying to find new ways to tell stories that reflect the new world in which we find ourselves, much more than the well-made plays on our main stages. I think of the work of companies like Quarantine, the Manchester-based company, whose productions blur the boundaries between real life and acting, audiences and performers, and whose Amazing White Trash was an extraordinary dirty ballet made and performed by a group of young Manchester men with no acting experience, which told you more about what it means to be young, white and working class in Britain today than any sociologist could ever manage. Or maybe Out of Joint's recent promenade, Macbeth, transposed to an African country, that reinvented Shakespeare for a whole load of teenagers who've been turned off of Shakespeare from the way they're taught it in school. I also see increasing evidence that, like that Slam Dunk audience, audiences are increasingly refusing to sit quietly in their seats and have a gin and tonic in the interval. They crave theatre, but they want it delivered in different forms. They want to experience the promenade and site-specific performances of companies such as Dream Think Speak, Frantic Assembly, Wilson and Wilson, Shunt, whose Tropicana was at the National, or Punch Drunk, whose installation and dance-based The Firebird Ball was a sell-out word-of-mouth hit earlier this year, or Gridiron, who've done brilliant shows such as Decky Does a Bronco. Audiences are also flocking to large outdoor performances such as Improbable Sticky, Boiler House's 3,600 Seconds, or Knee High's outdoor shows. And they're discovering the revitalised world of live art, which is currently undergoing its own renaissance and includes the work of people like Ducky, Maria Kaneski's Ghost Train, as well as the work of Bobby Baker and Mem Morrison. There is a whole world out there, if only you would look for it. But I'm worried that we won't look. I'm often astonished to discover how little of other people's work that theatre practitioners just get out to see. Just as I'm aghast that the way that those of us in my profession follow each other around nose to tail and seldom strike out on our own without a PR holding our hand. I'm old enough to have already seen a generation of people working in the live art field turn their backs on Britain. The loss in the late 1980s of impact, the lack of recognition of forced entertainment, has been as great a tragedy for theatre in this country as the defection of Peter Brook. And I worry that many of the companies that I've listed may suffer the same fate, because simply they work in areas, street theatre, children's theatre, site-specific theatre and live art, that are just not accorded the kind of attention and respect that traditional theatre gets. Over the last decade, Theatre Rights and Oily Cart have both been producing some of the most theatrically innovative work that's been taking place in this country. But because they work in children's theatre, a field that's undervalued and ignored, their work has received very little attention, either critically or from the theatre profession itself. OK, let's just do a quick thing. How many people in the last 3 years have seen an Oily Cart show? Can you put your hands up? OK, I mean, that's actually, I think, really not bad at all. But actually, it seems to me anybody who was interested in theatre and in the practices of theatre and kind of the experimental and more radical forms of theatre would want to see an Oily Cart show, quite simply because what they have been doing has been breaking so many boundaries. Similarly, street arts is an area of theatre that has an ability to bring new arts to new audiences, to support risk-taking artists, to build partnerships and transform lives and bring communities together, and which has a significant role to play in the social and economic regeneration of communities and developing social inclusion. Yet it's an area that is almost entirely ignored by the last Theatre Review, which receives very little arts funding and which barely registers any critical coverage. As far as mainstream theatre is concerned, it's out of sight and out of mind, and yet it's a form that has the ability to genuinely touch people's lives. The question we need to address is how will new work, work that really reflects the 21st century, ever get a chance to develop when so much effort is expended on maintaining the existing canon? When the dominant theatre culture values text over the visual and the physical, work that takes place in the playhouse over that in found spaces or within the community, the past over the future. I don't for a moment believe we should make a bonfire of the past, but I do think that those of you who work in theatre and those of us who review it and write about it need to be much more prepared to embrace the new, wrestle with new vocabularies. We must not reject the new because it is unlike what has gone before. There are welcome signs, the Nationals' championing of Knee-High, Improbable and Shunt, the Barbican Bite season support for Ridiculousness and Ducky, programming at places like The Studio at Sheffield, where young companies such as Unlimited, Third Angel and Dead Earnest are getting a chance. But there is so much more happening out there. If we want a theatre that doesn't just slide into obsolescence, then we in the theatre profession have to get on our bikes and go out and see it and support it and nurture it and help give it as central a place in our theatre culture as we afford to Shakespeare, Ibsen, Granville Barker, David Hare and Alan Bennett. Thank you.